So let me call our speakers to the floor, and we will be talking about changes needed. Do you want to come? Thank you. Changes needed in a broadcasting world. So my first question to our speakers will be about changes. What are the changes needed in radio broadcasting? I will shut up the guy. Changes needed in radio broadcasting. So what's the most relevant change needed in radio broadcasting today? Who wants to start?
I can start if you like. I think what's interesting is when you look at radio, actually an awful lot of music radio essentially is just based on format radio that was born in the United States in the 1970s. And so an enormous amount of music radio was born, or the shape of music radio was created at a time when the competition for airtime were, say, your two dozen LPs, albums you might have on your shelves at home. Whereas now we're in a situation whereby you have an almost infinite number of songs and albums at your disposal, wherever you are. So I think the interesting thing for radio is how programmers, music programmers for radio stations adapt to that. You know, the rules that we used to follow, maybe, when the competition was 100 songs, aren't necessarily the rules that we need to be following when the competition's 20, 30 million songs. I think there's a couple of things. I think it's an incredibly exciting time to be working in this sort of media. In fact, the most exciting time, but it's also mildly terrifying as well. None of us know where this is going. We can all predict, you know, the next couple of steps maybe, but the idea that anybody sees a clear path through to where this industry will be in 20 years' time, or
only
10 years' time.
Can we bring the audience lights down a little bit and still keep the stage lit?
Okay, Kurt, we'll do it.
the idea that anybody knows where this this industry is going to be in even 10 years' time is foolish. And that is mildly terrifying, but also incredibly exciting. So what radio programmers need to do now is think again about how they can add value to music, how they can take their listeners through a journey, how they bring that music together, and also how they, you know, the importance of programming that isn't just music. You know, we've, at Absolute Radio, spent the last few years slowly building out programs that aren't just reliant on 10 great songs in a row, which the radio station that was before Absolute Radio, Virgin Radio, that was their strapline, because I can get 10 perfect great songs for me somewhere else. But there's all sorts of fantastic opportunities as well. It's the data is just phenomenal. Speaking as an old radio hand myself, moving from a situation where you have listening figures that come in four times a year through Radar, and Radar, Jerry, an amazing body of work, just an incredible survey. But the data that's on offer that will allow us to program based on what listeners were doing last week, yesterday, last hour, is incredibly, incredibly powerful.
Yeah. I wonder if the future is based on one single player.
What do you think, Simon?
I think I agree with Tony that no one can really predict what's going to happen in the next 5, 10 years' time, even next year almost. What we see, the reason why we've got one player for radio play for our stations is partly practical. I mean, we might be the biggest commercial radio group in the Nordics, but it's a relatively small industry. We have a relatively small share of total media spend, much lower than the average in Europe, meaning that we simply don't have the finances to develop apps for multiple platforms. And it's our strategy with one player isn't just about mobile. It's about all the coming devices. So we'll be launching a Sonos app in the next couple of weeks. And we've launched a in-car app for streaming with Volvo, for example. And it's about, my head at the moment is a lot in the car dashboard, where we're heading in that particular space, where mobile is a part of that. But for radio play, it's a lot about a multi-platform distribution strategy where we can leverage our brands across, or leverage our stations across, well, many different devices.
Yeah, we have been talking about content, but advertising today is also part of the content. Adrian, do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I agree with the guys that you can't predict the future, but one thing that you can do and what you can look at are consumer behaviors, and that's something that we've been doing. We spend a lot of time at Whitespace doing, and when we look at audio advertising or mobile display advertising, what we try to do is take the insights that we gain from consumer interactions with the device and with the content to then predict and align ad experiences that will match those behaviors and those needs and the things that we exhibit. So one of the things that we see a lot in display, which we're now bringing to the table with audio advertising, is this greater level of interactivity. And you mentioned in your slides where basically things happen in one place. You can have task completion, you have interactivity, and you have this engagement and this one-to-one dialogue with users. And I think that's changing a lot. The old model, I guess, of radio advertising and audio has been very much this fire hose approach where you have one message for one audience. And the consumer expectations are very different now. They want that level of personalization. So we built some technology now, which we've been working on for about 18 months, which brings in different types of levels of interactivity. And the conduits for those interactions are there are many opportunities for us. Some are in, we've developed that are in a prototype stage, some are in a beta stage, and one is ready now and ready to go, and that's voice interactivity. We're basically...
Spooky?
Not necessarily. I think if you look at the behaviours of how people consume content, particularly audio content, I mean, audio plays a different role in our lives and as individuals at different moments throughout the day. We might be walking to work, we might be on the tube, we might be Bluetoothing our phone in the car if you drive. There are natural, the natural behaviour to interact with an audio ad in many scenarios will be voice. The content might be, the phone might be off, the app might be being played in the background, you have your hands on the steering wheel, there's no way to touch ads and swipe them and do things like that. So we're exploring new ways that will push the boundaries and allow consumers to interact and have an opportunity to have a voice.
That's very interesting. And about targeting, you're the targeting guy around here. What's about targeting in all of this? Content versus advertising.
Yeah, it's a good point. I think, again, following up from the what others have been talking about, targeting is both about content as well as ads. So imagine if you're walking and driving, you need different kind of traffic information depending upon where you are. The reason Paula mentioned rubbish ads, as far as I was concerned, was because I was living in Finland and listening to anything other than Finnish radios. Apologies to any Finnish broadcasters who might be here. And it just wasn't relevant to me, and that's how I started off onto this venture. But we did a little bit of a survey with listeners in the UK, people who listen to radio, and one of the interesting things that came across to me was about 44% said they don't mind advertising on radio. That's a huge number. One of the media that clearly has much less resistance to advertising. And even better, if you asked about the people who wouldn't mind advertising when it is relevant, that percentage went up to close to 70% who didn't mind advertisements if they were relevant. And that goes on with, as I said, the content and so on and so forth. And there was also a recent survey done by XAD and Telemetrics here, a study on mobile advertising. And it was found that about over 70% people do want, or over 50% of the people expect that when there's an advertisement, to have something geographically within 8 miles around them, the context or the subject of that. So the importance of targeting, whether it is based on content, whether it's on behavior, whether it is
location,
on demographics, is extremely important. The mobile is a very personal device. I worked for Nokia for many years. We were ahead in many things. But one of the things we realized is it's all about the personal nature of the device. It's with you. It's how it is. And to serve your listeners better using the benefits of that is amazing.
Yeah, we are actually talking about people as listeners, and we are talking essentially about relations. Listeners' expectations are always about good quality, entertaining content. And how to relate editorial content with brands. Tony, would you mind talking a little bit about this?
Sure, yeah. I'd just jump back to one small point, because I think there's a couple of really important points there, that actually in the UK, commercial radio is incredibly lucky in the UK because it's got the BBC. and the reason the BBC is a fantastic advantage for commercial radio in the UK is it proves that, as Shankar was saying, of all of those people that tune into commercial radio, they have said they are open to commercial messages because there is an alternative for them that has no commercial messages. So if you choose to listen to commercial radio, you are saying that I am open to hearing commercial messages.
You are aware that it's part of the deal.
Yeah. I think you're completely right that the relevancy of ads is very important in reducing the dissatisfaction a listener might have with a product, with a radio station. I think I'm always surprised though when people say, oh, listeners will love to hear relevant ads. Nobody wants to hear ads, if we're honest. Nobody wants to hear relevant ads. But actually, the relevancy of ads, nobody actually chooses. I'm never going to put a billboard by the side of the road for Absolute Radio, listen to Absolute Radio. Our ads are relevant to you. but actually, in the process of listening, it's building up that attachment a radio station has to its audience, or that the attachment an audience has to its radio station in terms of saying, this is a place for people like me. Its programming is based around stuff I'm in. So to your question, what we now have to do is add more engaging programs than we used to. And this is, again, why it's exciting for radio to be in radio, because you can't just sit back on doing the easy things that you might have been able to do before. And then tying that into commercial, I was at Adweek, if anybody else was at Adweek, Europe, earlier this year, and looking at the program for the sessions of Adweek was fascinating, because it was like a tale of two conferences. Two completely opposite things dominated the schedule for Adweek. On one hand, there was programmatic. On the other hand, there was branded content native advertising. One, zero relationship with any person as it's going through, just being fine targeted on finding the right audience. The other, in terms of integrating the content, the commercial into the content. And the fascinating thing for radio is that this is an opportunity. We have an opportunity in both areas, through technologies like AdSwizz or Exojet to find the right audience, and through what radio has always done in terms of being that trusted voice, that through whether you call it promotion, sponsorship, non-traditional revenue, any of these things.
Sorry to interrupt, but you are having more and more native advertising, brand and content, aren't you?
Yes, but I think that as a programmer, I think that's a fantastic thing. I've been able to afford to run music documentaries paid for by Volkswagen, live comedy shows paid for by Just for Men. And I'm not just selfishly taking the money here. There's, we are creating programs that really support a brand's message, but also enhance the level of the listener's experience.
Yeah. In your case, Simon?
In terms of branded content?
Yeah.
I mean, we're seeing similar kind of things. We've been working with Brand Care or NTR, whatever you want to call it. It's been something that radio has been fantastic at. But I think that working for a company that also is owned by TV, one of the things that TV has been very, very good at is AFP, or Ad Finance Programming. Which is basically what Tony's describing. And that combined with the other challenges that I think the radio has in terms of how commercial radio, particularly in markets that are dominated by public service, it's interesting that you say that the BBC is fantastic for commercial radio. I don't know if we'd say that Sveriges Radio, the public service broadcaster in Sweden, is fantastic for radio in Sweden, or for commercial radio in Sweden. But it gives us the opportunity to create that kind of content that would allow us to compete with them on non-music. Because one of the things that I look at the moment is that on one side we have that 80% of traditional radio listening, FM radio listening in Sweden is to the public service broadcaster. And there it's very, very difficult to compete with them, because the vast majority of those listeners, when we do surveys, say that they're never going to try us out because they're not interested in hearing commercials. On the other side, you've got Spotify, where in Sweden and Norway, over 75% of all people using Spotify are paying for it. So basically, I see Spotify before, 3 years ago, when we started looking at what we're going to do digitally, I would look at Spotify and say, as they were saying to the marketplace, that they're going to be competing for radio's advertising dollars. And in the end, they didn't build that market, the digital audio streaming media market. They built a market for themselves around paid-for content and are teaching consumers to listen to music without advertising. So almost, instead of becoming sort of the YouTube for radio, they became the Netflix for radio. I think that's an interesting challenge that we're facing in the Nordics, is on the one side, heavy competition from public service, on the other side, competition from Spotify, YouTube, and that kind of service, and finding our role in the middle there, especially when just doing linear format radio a la USA 1970s isn't going to cut it in the next 5 years.
Is it the portfolio strategy and having one app a kind of a strategy, a solution for that situation?
Well, it's yes, it's absolutely. That's one of the reasons we've done that. I mean, if you look at the visibility of the app, we're consistently in the top 100 on both Google Play and on the Apple App Store. In the overall list, on the music list, we're consistently top 5 on iTunes, top 10 on Google Play. And whereas when we previously had individual branded apps, maybe our biggest brands might be top 200, but the other stations were just falling away. And one of the things we see, at least, is that radio apps are sticky. They're apps that people tend to leave on the telephone. One of the biggest challenges, though, is they're keeping them on the telephone, they're updating them, but making sure they come back and working with CRM, with push notification, with email and other communication tools to get them to bring them back into the app is one of the biggest challenges for mobile.
Yeah, and other challenges come into this relation between content and listeners and advertising. The technology behind it might make it easy for Tony and Simon. Would you, I don't know, Adrian or Shankar, which one would you?
Absolutely. I think there's, when you're looking at mobile devices, I think if to really capitalize on the opportunity that it presents, whether you're an advertiser or a content provider, I think you really need to immerse yourself in that that device experience, that consumer experience on the client side. And I know there's always this ongoing discussion around where does the technology sit? Is it sort of a server side solution where we push things out, or is it should we only have a client side technology? And I think the answer to that is actually you should have both. You certainly need some systems to push content and advertising out, but the technology that sits on the device itself gives you so much more. Give you so much insight into what actually consumers are thinking and feeling, what their attitudes are towards whether your advertising messages or to your content. And I'll use the example of this voice interactivity. It sounds great, and we talk about it, and you say it might sound creepy. It gives you some fantastic and really rich information in real time about, based on the responses that consumers give, whether it's that they feel positive towards the experience or negative. You get explicit words in real time, and that gives you the opportunity then to adapt your messaging, whether that's through an advertising or whether it's through content, that you know we've never had that opportunity afforded to us before. And that's just one example of what can be done. So I think the tech is very important when we're talking about mobile, is to really understand the consumers. And there's a lot of data out there that you can look at, and there's a lot of research. We've conducted some of our own. We use information that's out there. And there's a really interesting statistic that I saw recently, which says that teens are switching between media up to 27 times an hour. So the importance of understanding their behaviors and what they're actually doing and why they're doing it is more critical now than ever before. And I don't think you can really understand that behavior and understand them unless you really immerse yourself into the device. That's the approach that we take.
Yeah.
And let me build up on what Adrian was talking about. I think this whole, sometimes you have get into the discussion about client-server, client-server implementation and so on. I think more than 8 years back when we were presenting one of the smartphones in Nokia, we were talking about the device having the power equal to a computer. Today, actually, you got quad CPUs in mobile phones. That's enormous processing power that works very well. And I think one thing that I keep looking at and saying, when you need to do things, when you need to do personalization, whether it's content, advertising, you need processing power. You have two options: build it up yourself and pay for it on your server, or use the power that your listeners are bringing. They're buying the 600-pound, 800-pound processing machines and bringing it into your network. How do you actually utilize not just the relevance and the knowledge of the personal devices, but also the processing capacity and the technology that's available in there to your maximum? And that's something to definitely give a thought to.
Yeah. Also, the problem with youth is totally not into radio. How could technology bring them on to our side once again? What do you guys think about this? Tough question, isn't it?
It is, although I think what
we're seeing... Well, is technology the way to save us from losing youth for good?
I don't think technology can... I think we need to have the right technology, but technology isn't the thing that will save us. The thing that will save us is giving a compelling reason for somebody to want to consume.
But how do you get into the youth people if they are not listening to your content?
So you need to be in the right areas, of course. We've taken a policy over the years of being where the audience is. And recently we relaunched our website, and the website as a whole is focused tightly focused on driving people to listen. So explaining the product to people when they arrive, driving people to listen, and then driving people to log in, to register and log in. But as well as that, we have a policy of pushing content out to where the potential audience is. So whether that be on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, wherever else, those are the feeder channels, if you like, to pull people into the brand. I think the interesting thing to say on youth is the challenge, as you suggest, in terms of that research, is for time, not necessarily reach. I think you look at the reach for radio, and it holds up incredibly strongly. The challenge is just all of the different forms of media that that particularly younger listeners are consuming within that hour. So listeners are still buying into radio, but we need to fight harder to keep them with us.
Do you have anything you want to add, Adrian?
Yeah, I think you put it on your slide, I think it's really interesting that there's this notion of like task completion and basically integrating and layering services into the experience, whether that be content or advertising. I think that's really prevalent more and more now. I mean, apps are basically changing the way we behave and the way we consume things. So
that 15-year-old girl was on Facebook during the whole concert.
Exactly. So I think for youth, we need to provide them opportunities, whether it's from a content perspective or an advertising experience, to have a voice, to participate. You've probably all seen the slides from Mary Meeker around the 150 times a day we check our phone. And if you actually scratch the surface and look at what actually happens, what are they doing those 150 times, you see a lot of things behaviors such as obviously not just texting and speaking, but taking playing an app, playing games, taking photos. So as consumers, we've become more creative. We're becoming curators. We express ourselves differently through different mediums and through the technology. So I think we need to see much more integration at that moment in time.
I would probably argue the complete opposite. I think when you look at what companies like Facebook are doing now, they're disaggregating their apps. And there's you're being forced to have your own specific app for Messenger. Google, with their Google Docs and Google Drive, are forcing you to have separate apps for Word documents, not Word documents, but Google's variant of spreadsheets and so on. We're in this process. We're in a period now of very fine, tightly defined apps that perform a single use. We relaunched our apps this year and pulled out the social plugins from it. We removed social login because we thought actually our audience, the social plugins were a distraction from what we actually wanted our audience to do, which was listen. That doesn't mean that we aren't active on Facebook. We are, but we're aware that our audience consumes Facebook on Facebook. They don't necessarily want an aggregated app to consume all of their media through. Additionally, we we took social sign-in out of our apps because we were concerned that our audience, which is an older audience, so 30 to 45-year-olds typically, our audience were a little cynical about the opaqueness of what happened when you clicked register or sign in with a social plugin, at how much information was passed from one party to another when it wasn't you filling in a form. So we went back from social sign in to actually our users creating Absolute Radio accounts, filling in their own information. And we've seen a small uplift, but an uplift all the same since we removed social sign in. So I think there's a danger in trying to force make your apps turn into a Swiss Army knife with everything in them.
If I can just add on to that, especially on the social login, it's an interesting exercise. With our own apps and people using it, I think about we don't really actively promote it. It just says Facebook login on the first screen if you have a choice, if you want to. And about 30%, over 30% just click on that anyway. But yes, it would vary from the audience. For the youth, it's amazing how willing they are willing to give the information. But having said that, I'm a little bit skeptical. As you see, as Paula pointed out, the competition for radio, the new competition, is the Facebook and the Google and the Apple. And using their logins, Facebook is already starting to clamp down on how you can use the data and what you can access to, and so on and so forth. So there is no easy quick fix out there other than building your own loyal base and the ability to do so. So that's definitely
something. Yeah, it just goes back and forward in the ways to make people connecting to your brand and actually logging into your app. And in your case, what people do you use social logins?
Yeah, we use social login. I think on the app we have about 75% of our users are logged in when they're using it. On the desktop web, it's below 10%. But going back to the question about reaching youth, I think that technology absolutely isn't the answer to reaching youth. It's one of the tactics or tools you can use. But more importantly, I think for radio brands aiming at an audience under 25, if there are any, because I mean in our group we don't aim at under 25s, we aim at 25-50, because that's where commercial interests lie. There's no advertisers in Scandinavia who are particularly interested in 15-year-olds. So the big question for us is, are we going to end up like the morning newspapers in Sweden that no one has a subscription to anymore? Those 15-year-olds or 20-year-olds when they started university that traditionally would have a subscription to their morning newspaper have stopped doing that because they just use the web instead. Are people going to stop with the habit of listening to radio? And it comes back again to the content, to what we're doing as a radio brand and what touch points we have with the consumer. And I don't think those touch points necessarily need to be technical. They can be touch points in terms of events. They can be touch points in terms of what we do on YouTube. In Energy, which we have on license in Sweden, has one of the largest groups of followers to our YouTube channel in the country, which is fascinating to see how that's evolved over the years.
Yeah.
And I think it's about trying to see how you can be relevant to the consumer, not just in terms of being a linear audio broadcaster, but about being a vital youth brand, potentially. Not that I'm saying that we're amazing at doing that. That's just when I look at when we talk about technology or social login or whatever it might be, being the key to fixing things for youth, I don't know.
I absolutely 100% agree. But then you also have to think, too, that the youth of today will be your customer of tomorrow.
Well, exactly.
So understanding their behaviours today. And, I mean, here's the other thing. We're a little bit older. We're not in that category. We've grown up and seen a lot of change from...
Who would say? No one would notice that.
I've got two little girls, and they grow up, you know, they've got their iPhone, and then they've got my iPhone and my iPad. But, you know, that's what they're playing with today. And so their behaviours and their interactions with technology are far different to ours. And they don't understand what a click is, but they understand what a swipe is. there's a big difference. And I think the thing to what I'm saying is, like, of course, you may not want to attract youth today, but I think we need to pay attention to their behaviours today.
Absolutely.
Because that will dictate what you do tomorrow.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is, I don't think technology is the solution to attracting youth today. that I think that absolutely we need to understand what the innovators, and the innovators in this space might be six-year-olds, how their consumer behaviour is changing, but how that actually impacts upon our commercial decisions we make today for our audience today is a different thing. But it's on the same point that we can talk about mobile being fascinating and important, but 93% of our listeners listen via FM. And of the remaining 7%, about half of them are starting a stream on mobile, but the listening time is around 15, 20 minutes per session, whereas it's upwards of an hour and a half on the desktop. So the actual number of hours we're getting out of mobile of our total listening is probably below 2%. If you really think about it like that, it might be total consumption.
Totally.
And then you might be saying, well, actually at 2%, that's the point where you stop working on that. If you're developing a website or an app, that's the point you stop supporting it.
Yeah, we're totally in a context where two realities are happening at the same time, the mobile, the digital on the web, and also the FM, the traditional listening. It's all happening at the same time. But for all age groups, mobile media consumption is growing by the day. We have to say that. So digital strategies must include mobile and maybe should consider a special approach to mobile in terms of content, in terms of accessibility, in terms of advertising, regarding this new context of consumption. So I would ask you, is geolocation the next big thing? Or
I hate predicting the next big thing because it often turns out to be wrong.
Could it be the next big thing?
It possibly is. Clearly geolocation has a big impact.
But geolocation combined with age and interests?
Yes, exactly. I think that's what I was coming to say. Listening to what Simon and Adrian were talking about, yes, maybe commercials are not the most important one for your 15 to 24s, but then the technology, geolocation, demographics, and so on can allow you to actually deliver a less commercial equipped, so you can have more programming for the same stream for the 15 to 24 and increase the amount of advertising for once they are past the 24. But it helps. That's one way of using technology to bring the younger audience and keeping them loyal to your station so that they carry on over the age and build up and stay with you.
Yeah, and syncing ads. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Syncing ads?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is
combined with geolocation and targeting.
I think on geolocation, particularly for audio content, what's going to be very interesting is directional geotargeting. I think that will be quite relevant in time. But on syncing ads, I think it's where the industry is looking at right now. Is that the future? I don't think it is. I think it's we have to look at, again, the behavior and how we consume the content. And I think in most cases, if you look at music streaming, if you're looking at podcasts, your phone is off or the app is playing in the background. So syncing a static display banner with an audio message is, I don't think, it's the future. We see, we've conducted some brand impact studies which suggest, which show clear connections between interactivity and purchase intent and brand impact. So I think the different connections that you provide from an interactive perspective is going to be more important. And then what you can do from a targeting perspective, if you get enough data from that alone, I mean, just think of it this way. Enough people who respond to ads, whether they're talking, whether they're tapping the phone or shaking it, whatever they might do, then starts to give you insights into audience segments and clusters. Are they peer influencers or opinion leaders and things like that as well towards brands or towards content? So I think there's this potentially this new wave of targeting over and above just knowing something about the user from a demographic perspective.
Yeah, we're approaching the end of our session, and we started by saying that mobile is the new black. I wonder if it really is, or is it just our reality that we have been avoiding to recognize? And since advertising business model for radio has been working and still works, and people keep on listening on FM, so what's your experience, Adrian and Shankar, and what's your perspective as broadcasters? Who wants to start? Technology starts.
Yes, I think the technology, what we see, and sort of what we built is specifically designed for the mobile devices right now, but it will be platform and device agnostic. So there's no reason, if you look at just take a look at Android. I mean, they are everywhere. So, and the way that they've constructed their platform is to allow developers to build applications and technology across different delivery channels, if you want to call it that, whether it's the phone, the car, the TV, in-home, whatever. So I think we'll see, I think we'll find it much easier to distribute content and distribute ad experiences across platforms.
Shankar.
I mean, I took a personal risk leaving a corporate job and putting my own money into a startup on this. And to be honest, I question this quite often myself. Is mobile the way to go? And one of the points where it turned was when Apple decided to do iTunes Radio. Now, that's mobile. If a company like mobile decides that radio is important for them as part of the of their mobile strategy, I convinced myself I couldn't be too wrong in that. So, yes, is it the new black? We'll see where it is. But the trends clearly, what the other players are doing, those who know the business, Facebook is concentrating on mobile. There's so much focus by everybody on mobile, and you know how things work. When you talk enough about it, it will happen. And so, yes.
What's your perspective as broadcasters?
It's fairly simple. It's, you know, if it's technically possible and there's value in it, especially value in it for the either for the listener or for the advertiser, you've got to do it because somebody else will do it instead. So I mentioned Jerry from Radio, second time in this.
He Maybe said, we should bring him on.
told me a fantastic thing he'd read at just before the session, which was about how the farming industry was disrupted. And the farming industry was disrupted not by better farmers or anything like that, but by ice, because all of a sudden people found out that they could freeze food, and that utterly disrupted the farming industry. And that's a fascinating just example of we can't sit here and say, actually, radio's really great, airtime's working fantastic, we're fine, we'll just sit back. 90% of the audience listen to it every week. We're in a fantastic position. We can't do that because somebody else will come and steal the future away from us. So we need to be there disrupting ourselves.
Don't you have this kind of experience while approaching broadcasters, as Tony was?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the, I mean, if you look at various media, you look at print, for example, they have been hit very badly with internet and they've gone through the whole phase. Radio, relatively, is in that very safe position. You look at the radio revenues, plus minus a couple of percent all through.
It still works, right?
It still works. As Tony pointed out, listenership is still 80, 90% in most countries. And when I talk to broadcasters, to be very honest, I think the biggest battle I find is the it's a statics. Everyone agrees this is the future, but it's not now. And I think it's just always a question of when rather than if. And that's definitely is a challenge.
Simon, you want to add something?
For me, mobile was the new black 4 years ago, and I can't imagine there's any broadcaster room who doesn't have a mobile strategy and a mobile app. That's kind of feels like it's, yeah, we all agree that mobile is part of our future. But the disruption thing, I think, is really fascinating because there is definitely a tendency for radio to stick its head in the sand and say, we've got all these hours today, we have all these people listening, and the average age of commercial radio listening on total radio listening is going upwards. But that's fine, because even if we were to ignore the youth, we'll probably survive 20 years in the future, at least. And by the time the car dashboard is fully digitalised and the whole amount of cars there are out there are turned into CarPlay or whatever they're going to turn into, it's also 20 years away, you could argue. And so I think there is another problem as well that affects our opportunity to disrupt ourselves is the way radio is measured. Because at least in our market and in many other markets, we don't need to create a new business model when we go online. We have no need because Radar or CIFO, whoever it is measuring our radio audience, are measuring our online listenership. Whereas if I look at our colleagues at TV, they have to completely recreate their business model when they're going on to digital in terms of web TV spots, pre-rolls, and how they reach direct to consumers with a direct OTT service taking payment directly from the consumer. And we don't have that incentive. I mean, we've been broadcasting online since 2000 or 2001, and it's the same as it was then. So right. without that incentive to dismantle ourselves and disrupt ourselves, it becomes very, very difficult to convince C-level management or above to do the big investment that's needed to unlock the opportunity that the massive reach radio has to open up new business areas and to reach into to completely different areas that we're not reaching into today.
Great. We still have time. I think I'll open the floor to the audience. Does anyone have a question? Don't be shy. You all add your coffee. Thank you very much. Right here in the front. Over here, Brad.
Who raised their hand?
Oh, I think I can talk loud.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks.
Everyone seems to be mentioning youth as if they're from another planet. So my question is, have you thought about like having a lot of interns, bringing those people in, bringing your age down, and have programs that will attract? It's almost like people have given up, but hire those people, bring them in, like get their insights. Don't keep them out there.
Are you suggesting we discriminate on age? So I think, well, I think that's it's very appropriate. I think, you know, there are a couple of big radio brands in the UK, KISS and Radio 1, which are doing phenomenal things to attract youth to radio. And even though that's not my station's market, I feel personally indebted to them for doing that because they're breeding the next generation of Absolute Radio listeners, if you like. So I agree wholeheartedly.
Radio 1 does a fantastic job in the UK, even though the average age of a Radio 1 listener is still 33. The average age of a P3, which is the equivalent in Sweden, listener is 36. They're doing a shit job at driving the youth. I mean, they should be forcing down that age, and they should be picking up that area, is my opinion. I think they're doing an absolutely terrible job of picking up youth. And we talk about youth like another planet, or my 9-year-old sometimes feels like he is from another planet. But it's also about what market you're looking at. I mean, if we've got our main AC brand as aiming at so 30 to 55-year-olds, youth is another planet for us because we're not trying to attract youth. It's not our commercial target group, rightly or wrongly. It might be that our strategy is completely stupid, and in fact, we ought to be having a radio brand that is particularly looking at youth and really looking at 15-year-olds and trying to attract and work on how we could do to attract them in different ways than just traditional linear radio. We'll find out.
Any other question? I have one. You work in a portfolio basis. Why not have a youth-oriented radio station and
Well, energy is more youth orientated,
yeah.
But it's still it's a really practical reason.
Let them
reason.
Flow within your radio brands.
It's a really practical reason. Given that 90% of our advertising comes from
older
25 plus,
yeah.
The media buyers are not interested in reaching that youth target group. We had a very successful youth brand that was called The Voice that had a really low average age a few years back. And we couldn't monetize it. It wasn't financially viable.
Yeah, sometimes working with youth has that revenue problem, really.
I disagree. I mean, I worked for Nickelodeon and MTV. They don't have a revenue problem.
No, but they have a different business model, completely different business model based upon
totally
a distribution fees. We don't have distribution fees in radio. If we had distribution fees, we could also target different people. But we live on advertising. And I love Nickelodeon, and I love those kind of brands and that area, but it's nothing that you can take
model.
To radio,
yeah.
Unfortunately.
No, but Radio Disney is extremely popular on SiriusXM. I get in the car with my 8-year-old and all their friends. That's what they want me to turn on. So I think there is potential there because of the car, too.
SiriusXM is a wonderful model that's, if you could take that kind of idea and that kind of concept, which is effectively an OTT service for radio, take that into radio, I think, would be a really, really fascinating move if someone did that in Europe.
But in your case, you're talking about children, right? Not exactly teenagers.
Children.
Yeah.
I mean, but children want to skew up. There's always that aspiration.
Yeah. Yeah. Any other question? Okay, so I have one last question. We still have time. And it regards measurement. What should be done with measurement to improve your side and your side of the business. Please do
stop measuring radio online in the same way that you measure traditional reach and measure it through the server side. And that's a project we're working on in Scandinavia.
Okay. You want to tell us more about that project? That might be interesting.
We're discussing with the forum around advertisers and commercial broadcasters and the media agencies to see how we can measure radio in a different way.
Yeah, you really have
online
initiatives in Scandinavian.
Tony. Yeah, there's also the podcasting is
booming
in Sweden in a way that nowhere else in the world can see. We also have the monetization of streaming music services like Spotify to look into, which is a massive new market that if we can find a way to measure that in a different way, could open up completely new revenue sources and allow us to start looking at the youth, perhaps.
Anyone else? Tony?
Basically, as a commercial operation, you should be measuring your audience in a way that you're able to commercialize it through in terms of...
shouldn't we have a standard platform for that?
So, if all of the radio...
So that I could compare Absolute Radio with other radio stations streaming online?
I think there's a good argument for that, without a shadow of a doubt. I think that's... I think in the UK we're lucky to have an agreed form of audience measurement, and I think... I would be nervous to break away from that because it has a lot of value.
Mm-hmm.
We're able to monetize our audience through the amount of audio impressions we sell online. So that's a fantastic internal metric for us. But externally, I think we have a fantastic body that that the UK radio all invests in Radar. And I think any future sort of measurement I would be keen for it to carry on going through Radar.
Okay, one final comment?
Yeah, and I think measurement is absolutely critical. Broadcast measurement and internet measurement are very different. The amount of accuracy and the in-depth you can get on internet can be scary, to be honest, for broadcasters who are used to measuring diary-based this one. So, but I think it's something that just needs to be embraced because that's what advertisers are looking for.
Adrian, you want to add something?
Yeah, from an advertising perspective, it's actually you need to focus on interactivity. There's no point, from a digital perspective, clicks are redundant, particularly in an audio environment. And without that, all you have is, again, a fallback on a survey. So find ways to create interactivity, and that will then dictate different types of sub-measurements, whether it's task completion, attitudes towards the brand, etc.
Thank you very much, Simon, Tony, Shankar, and Adrian. Hope you had a great time. I surely did.